from the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Pleasant good morning to you. This is Patrick Timpone. Hope you all are doing good. It's another day in paradise here in Central Texas. Kind of coming off the 100 degrees, more into the 95 range, which pretty cool. I mean, pretty cool, right? I mean, got a cool front coming through. Boy, we've had a summer. I think I saw we have over 30 days of 100 degrees. 30 days over 100 degrees here in Central Texas. But it's warm all over the place, isn't it? You're going to meet integrative psychiatrist, leading expert in behavioral and mood disorders, Dr. James Greenblatt. Wow, we can get our head fixed here this morning. Just a second. I think you're going to enjoy it. Dr. Ilya Skolnikov, he's a chiropractor, kinesiologist, kind of a specialist in female hormones and thyroid, and he's going to be up next hour. And then a little addendum, a special guest after our two shows, we generally just do 2 hours, is Carrie Gilliam. She's written a book on glyphosates, Roundup. Investigative journalist, really a sharp lady, and she's been following the glyphosate Roundup GMO stuff for years. She was on a few months ago talking about the big class action lawsuit in San Francisco, huge one that's probably going to take 2 years. More attorneys and people than, you know, as you can imagine. And 2 years be a huge one, but the reason we're bringing her back today to talk about quite a victory for those of you who like a clean food supply. Monsanto lost a case with a single gentleman who was using Roundup. We think he worked for a school district, and he came up with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and big case, and he won. $291 million. It's not worth dying over non-Hodgkin lymphoma, but you can even get rid of that if you do it right, in our opinion, on One Radio Network. Anything is curable. But at any rate, so the camel's nose is now under the tent of the glyphosates and the GMOs. And so we'll talk with Carrie Gilliam today. Well, this whole ADHD thing, I want to dig in here because I have a lot of questions, and frankly, I'm not too excited about the explanations we're getting from most docs out there, and we'll see if Dr. James Greenblatt, what he thinks about it. He's an integrative psychiatrist. He's an expert in behavioral and medical disorders, ADHD, OCD, eating disorders, and anorexia, binge eating, depression, anxiety. He's been treating patients since 1990. And he's on to some, I think, probably ahead of the game more than most in the natural field, where he's looking at some natural things you can do. And he's talking about it in a different way rather than just giving people drugs, which is a welcome addition to the medical industrial complex. And his book is called Finally Focused, finallyfocusedbook.com. Good morning, Dr. Greenblatt. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Patrick. It's good to be on.
Yeah, well, it's good to be anywhere these days, right?
Yeah.
That's right. Above ground and taking nutrition, so we're in pretty good shape, aren't we? Well, Doc, you're up in the Boston area. In your private practice, for how long?
I've been practicing for 30 years now, child, adolescent, and adult psychiatry.
Wow. Well, I would suggest, I would ask you, 30 years ago, I mean, did you probably didn't even know the term ADHD?
Well, in reality, we've had different names over the past 100 years for this kind of behavior disorder of kids, and we kept changing the name every 10 or 20 years based on, you know, what was going on in the field of science. So it was used to be called the brain damage disorder, then minimal brain damage, then hyperactivity. So the term kept changing, and I use that as a reflection of we really didn't know what it was. I do believe we do understand this disorder now, and that's why there are better tools to treat it.
So all the different things like anxiety, that the kids get hyperactivity, irritability, and all that stuff, it's all generally clumped into the term ADHD these days?
I think ADHD is kind of the easiest way to describe it, but I think with professionals, you know, we're really able to separate the difference between someone who's depressed, someone who's anxious, or someone has attention and overactivity. So they are very discreet disorders or problems.
Right. But is it fair to say that they're all behavioral problems and not physiological problems?
Well, I think, you know, in the world that I travel, what I call an integrative psychiatry, I would see them more as kind of medical, biochemical problems. Doesn't mean they need to be treated with drugs. Our focus is on nutrition. But a lot of times there are underlying medical or biochemical reasons that someone might not be able to focus or pay attention.
Right, right. But can it be argued that that is simply the brain's reaction to whatever the person is doing mentally and emotionally and spiritually?
You know, for some, I think it can. For other kids, you talked about some of the environmental toxins earlier.
Right.
So, you know, we have lead, we have high copper, the Flint, Michigan thing. These all affect what you and I would call ADHD. So those are not something that the mind can just control. They need to be treated based on these environmental toxins.
I wasn't suggesting the mind control. What I was kind of thinking, going for, that if, let's see, because you all could, I mean, you can actually go in there and test different neurotransmitters, and you can actually see changes in the brain's conductivity and stuff, and that would be called a physiological problem or a physiological issue, right? And that's why years ago you all went in there and started trying to fix it with drugs?
Yeah, certainly the field of psychiatry has gotten very obsessed with medications as the only answer.
Yeah.
So depression is being a Prozac deficiency, and ADHD is being a Ritalin or amphetamine deficiency. So the field has gone, I think, way off track, only looking at medicines for kind of symptomatic relief. The work that we do is trying to find the underlying cause, if we can.
And what kind of things are you seeing that are the underlying cause?
Well, I mean, it's a gamut from the environmental, so, you know, heavy metals in the environment, nutritional deficiencies is a big focus of our work, problems with the gut, problems with reactivities to food, allergies, or even things like celiac and gluten sensitivity.
Uh-huh, yeah. So it's fair to say, like, when I was in grade school in the 50s, I mean, you never heard of this, I mean, kids just sat around in school and everybody was cool. I mean, it just, so there's something that's gone on in the last 50 years to precipitate all this stuff.
Sure, that's the premise of our work. I think the dietary changes in terms of the refined foods, the preservatives, the additives, along with some of the environmental toxins, clearly has set the stage for increased incidence of ADHD.
So do you think that the environmental toxins, Dr. Greenblatt, they actually get in, affect some of the brain synapses and are part and parcel of the whole behavior thing that we're seeing so much?
Yeah, I think the science is now available to really describe. So we know what, lead got the most press because of Flint, Michigan. But in Massachusetts, they looked at all the schools, and not only did they find a high percentage of lead in the water fountains of elementary schools, but high incidence of copper, so elevated copper. And we know how that affects neurotransmitters in the brain. And increase the likelihood of ADHD. Huh. So we do know some of the mechanisms, some of the phthalates, the environmental toxins, they actually get in the way of nutrients like zinc, creating zinc deficiency. So each mechanism is different, but I believe the science is now able to kind of help us sort this out.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the zinc, and I'd like to get your take on it. Years ago, I've done a lot of hair analysis, and I have copper pipes here in the country, and my copper was very high. I never really determined whether it was a lot in the body or just a lot was coming out, and that's always a guess when you do the hair analysis. But then zinc was probably one of the things that every time I did one, the docs would, the practitioner would say, well, just up your zinc, and that'll help ditch the copper. Is that generally true with high copper, zinc?
It's a good question. Yeah, pretty much it's a seesaw. As copper is elevated, because it's in our water supply and our pipes, zinc levels go down.
Yeah.
And zinc is critically important for hundreds of enzymes in the body, mostly in the brain.
Yeah.
But yes, taking extra zinc will help bring copper down and balance that ratio.
So when some of my audience says, Patrick, you're just crazy, I can just blame it on the copper.
You could.
I could.
Yeah.
What kind of, so how do you determine, I'm real curious, how do you determine when you work with kids, whether it's simply something going on mentally, emotionally, spiritually, but there's nothing going on in the actual brain that needs to, how do you determine that? I mean, I guess it would have to be in the brain at some point if they're exhibiting hyperactivity? No, you tell me.
Yes, but I think it takes a comprehensive assessment by a professional. It could be an hour and a half, at least, to really kind of understand how the child is thinking and feeling. Most importantly, because so much of the behaviors when we talk about ADHD are not willful, and the kids are repeatedly told that they're bad, they're stupid, why can't you just behave? And they internalize that, and self-esteem really plummets. So it's important to understand, one, the behaviors from the teachers and the parents, but just as important, what is feeling for the child, and then to develop a plan to support all those spiritual, psychological, and nutritional deficiencies.
The parents must be, how do they generally find you where the school says, this is Mrs. Jones, we have a problem here, and that kind of thing, and they find some people like you?
Yes, I think, our work over the years has been, in the old days we used to call it alternative medicine, but now it's become mainstream, and it's called integrative medicine. So I think parents looking for alternatives to medications, looking to see if there's something that can be assessed and treated, would find our program.
You mentioned the gut. Talk a bit about what you see with poor digestion, leaky gut, that kind of thing, and its relationship to their behavior.
Sure. I think... when parents read something, on the internet, they just assume, well, it's my child. So, the gut-brain connection is very significant.
Mm-hmm.
We now understand that, and there's research across many major psychiatric illnesses, from depression to schizophrenia to anxiety and ADHD. Doesn't mean everybody with ADHD has problems in the gut, but there's a fair percentage. So what we look at is something called dysbiosis, is when there is abnormal growth of certain bacteria that shouldn't be there, and we can test for that. and the treatment is just high dose probiotics, the good bacteria that we see on the commercials now. And we can assess and treat kids with probiotics.
Yeah. So what kind of tests do you do to find out? So you do tests to determine, Dr. Greenblatt, some of the unwanted actors in the gut?
Yeah, there's a urine test called an organic acid, which can pick up metabolites of certain bacteria in the gut that can affect brain function.
Organic, what's the name of it?
It's called an organic acid test. It's a urine test, looks at about 75 different compounds. There's about, 10 of them that are only produced by a yeast or bacteria. So it gives us a very easy window into looking at the GI tract. And also based on symptoms, and we can detect yeast metabolites as well. So by looking at these tests, we can assess if this child with ADHD might have a gut problem versus the next child with ADHD might not have a gut problem at all. It might be a high copper problem.
Well, that's clever. That's the first time we've heard of that one. Organic acid and a urine test.
Yes.
And it's curious how the urine, can display those different compounds.
Well, the bacteria produce these compounds, in the gut, and then it's just absorbed and carried in the bloodstream and then just filtered through the urine.
Filtered through. So these bacterium that shouldn't be there, where are they coming from?
We have a trillion bacteria in our gut. We have 4 to 5 pounds
of
bacteria lining our gut. And they do a lot of good things.
Yeah.
They produce nutrients. They protect us. They stimulate our immune system. But, oftentimes due to antibiotic use, stress, too much refined foods, diet, chemicals in the environment, it kind of creates an imbalance in the gut. So we get a growth of bacteria that are usually very small in number, can grow rapidly. And then they can produce some of these, what we call metabolites, that could contribute to behavior problems.
So these bacteria that get overgrown, they're there already. It's not something that come in from the outside. It's just an imbalance because of all the things you mentioned.
Correct.
That's right. Wow, isn't that curious how, so they all just have to get along down there.
Yeah, they need to get along. They need to be nurtured and fed with healthy food.
Yeah.
That's why when you mentioned over the past 50 years, as our food supply has changed, complete change in our ability to everything from fight infections to organize the gut bacteria.
Sure. It's interesting thinking back to grade school for me. And we had 7 kids, and we didn't go to the doctor. Nobody ever went to the doctor. And so we weren't given a lot of antibiotics like the kids are today either.
Yeah, no, it's certainly...
It's crazy.
It's been a little calmed down, but let's say 20 years ago, any child who coughed was put on an antibiotic.
And can you describe what an antibiotic does to the biome in the gut for us?
Sure. So not only might it kill the infection, the strep or whatever is being treated, but it would kill bacteria in the gut, the healthy bacteria, and then create that imbalance for that overgrowth of either yeast or other bacteria that weren't there in the same numbers initially.
Yeah. Okay. Stay right there, sir. We're going to continue with our conversation. Finally Focused is the name of the book. Sounds like a fellow that's on it, and this could be a good thing if you have a nephew, niece, or kid, or somebody with some of these issues. Maybe they would give him some way out, have opening a few doors for him. FinallyFocusedBook.com. Dr. Greenblatt. My name is Patrick Timpone, and this is OneRadioNetwork.com. We'll talk about the glyphosate thing and the big win in California in a couple of hours with Kerry Gillum. And then next hour, chiropractor, cool guy, and about hormones and thyroid, more about thyroids. We talk a lot about the thyroid. Dr. Thomas Cowan is going to be here on Thursday. Dr. Cowan He is the heart and not a, the heart is not a pump guy. He has a new book out on vaccines, but it's not just a book about another book about writing about how dangerous vaccines can be, but he's got some really cool stuff in there about the autoimmune process, the immune system, how it all works, how measles and mumps, he believes, are a natural thing that the, and he gives all, it's really, I've been reading the book. It's a great, great book. It's going to be a really nice book for you to give new moms that won't, you know, scare them. You know, just one book say, don't get vaccines and, you know, that kind of thing, which just kind of makes them more confused. But anyway, so that's coming up on Thursday. As you know, we've talked a lot. We've been talking a lot about these good bacteria and a company that we've come across very timely, talking to Dr. Greenblatt about probiotics. We think these are some of the best in the world. They're living. They're propagated by Wayne Blakely, and he actually turned his child's autistic behavior around by using a lot of these different probiotics, which is pretty cool. Well, we know the big connection with the gut and vaccines and autism. There's just no doubt about it anymore with the work of the GAPS people and Patricia McBride and those kind of folks. Anyway, here's a little pitch for Bifido, which has a thing called yttrium in it. That it's a very interesting nutrient that Dr. Olry researched. Previously with Mr. Living Streams, Wayne Blakely, about our Bifido product.
In Americans, we eat food without the yttrium in the gut, which is in curcumin. The turmeric plant is grown in India. It's full of yttrium. You take and convert it to curcumin and concentrate it, which is loaded with yttrium. We eat that curcumin, and if you have the right bacteria in your gut, you'll absorb that. You'll actually usually utilize that in your digestion. But if it's not there, then the body will utilize calcium. Get the yttrium out of the curcumin, okay? Mm-hmm. Get the yttrium out of it. You have to have those two bacteria in the lower tract. What I did was I took the two bacteria, pre-digested it, so you've got the product already digested. So that's why it works on everybody. If you don't have those two bacteria in your digestive tract, you can't absorb that stuff. It's not absorbable.
The yttrium.
The yttrium or the curcumin. It cakes up in the lower tract is what happens.
Mm-hmm.
It won't break it down.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I pre-digested it. It's the bacteria in there. It is loaded with bacteria. I mean, there's 90 million per milliliter in there. They're all alive, too. They're not dead like powdered stuff. You know?
Yttrium, who'd have thunk it? Wow, this is a marvelous nutrient that is essential to absorb our nutrients. And it's barely there in American soils. Well, you get it now in Bifido, Living Streams, in our store, the Bifido product, OneRadioNetwork.com. It's pretty cool. Then he has the Bifido 2 that you actually put in your ear, which travels down, does not go through the gut, so it doesn't have to deal with the hydrochloric acid and gets into the small intestine, and it's been helping people with this thing they call, they have a name for all these things. This one is SIBO, right? Small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and you actually put it in your ear. All of these products are in our store from Living Streams. There's 14 different products. If you'd like to learn more about them, talk to Marilyn with Living Streams, 360-912-2981, 360-912-2981. Please, after you talk to her, and if you decide to order some things, please go through our website. Otherwise, we will not get a commission, and that's how we support ourselves here, just by promoting products. We just work on donations, and we don't charge for anything. 390-912-2981. They're very careful about what they say online because of the FDA, and you have to be real careful about what you say these days. So there you go. We have our rebounder is still on sale. If you'd like to get the ultimate rebounder, which is the, they call it the ultimate or the quarter fold, it's a beautiful thing. Look at it on reboundair.com. They're generally, I think they sell for $420. And during our sale, which has about two more weeks, month of August, you can get it for $339. And then if you want the half fold, it's $299. So if you'd like to get the rebounder on sale, email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. That is patrick@oneradionetwork.com.
Know the source on One Radio Network.
Okay, we're talking with Interesting doc. He is James Greenblatt, MD, integrative psychiatrist, and he has a new book called Finally Focused. So I'm curious, when you just use probiotics and you get some results, were you surprised when you initially found that these guys would actually beef up the ones that you wanted? And are there special strains that you use, some more common bifidos than the other ones? Talk about the probiotics you use.
Sure. I think, you know, over the past 5 or 10 years now, the research in probiotics and the gut and the microbiome, as you described, is really exploding. So there are a few common themes we're finding in all illness is that health, you know, is related to the diversity of the microbiome. Yeah. So some of the illnesses that have been looked at, obesity, anorexia nervosa, which we study, they had very restricted and less diverse populations. So I don't think there's one strain. I think most of our work has been recommending multi-strain probiotics. I think that it provides a bigger, a more diverse group. And I also recommend patients change every, 4 to 6 months. So you're just not taking one probiotic.
The same one, yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen some true results, Doc, with just using the probiotics?
Absolutely. Huh. We've written about this for a number of years. That, again, it's not every ADHD case, but by looking carefully and assessing those that have these what we call dysbiosis in the gut, then these kids will do better. And we've been publishing cases for years.
Really? Yeah. Is there a difference between the adults that have, have a hard time focusing and go from one thing to another, and the kids? Is there a difference in what's going on?
For many individuals, it's really the same underlying disorder. We call it variable attention, hard to sustain focus. So it's often very similar. I think the most tragic part is untreated. So adults that go untreated have much higher incidences of financial problems, job problems, car accidents, and low self-esteem. So because, again, they're just repeatedly told they're no good, they fail at jobs, relationships are tough.
Mm-hmm.
So treating adolescents and adults are really just as important as treating these kids.
Dr. Greenblatt, what's going on in the more traditional medical model, psychiatrists and therapists that work with ADHD kids that don't understand all of the natural components that you do, and you talk about in your book, Finally Focused? What generally goes on?
Well, I think the incidence of prescriptions are increasing, not only in this country, around the world.
They're actually increasing with all the talk of this over-medication. That's curious.
Yes, and new drugs. So different medications are being produced by pharmaceutical companies that have the same, they're still amphetamines, stimulants, but new drugs. So there's ongoing financial incentive from pharmaceutical companies. The rates for adults, so now the pharmaceutical companies are marketing to adults with ADHD. So it's really interesting. Children with ADHD, there's a higher incidence of males with prescription drugs. But in adults, there are more females that are prescribed stimulant medications than males.
What do you make of that?
You know, I'm not sure if those that are seeking treatment are more females, but it is it's a little frightening how much of stimulants are being used and, I would say, abused on college campuses. It is common for kids to just share their medications, people just taking it for testing in the library. Abuse in college campuses is a major problem with
really?
These medications.
So you say there's stimulants. I would think in terms of hyperactivity, and this would be something to calm the person down, no?
Well, what it's stimulating, actually, are those areas of the brain that kind of put on the brake. So it's stimulating the brake system,
huh,
or more impulse control, and stimulating those aspects of attention and sustained focus. So they're not really stimulants for kids with ADHD. If you take too much of it, clearly it's amphetamines, and it will be very stimulating.
So the mind, brain, whatever, the psyche of the person in the typical ADHD is they'll be on something and they'll just flip on to something else just real quickly and can then lose track of where they are. How does it work?
Yes, I think that the best term that I like is called a persistence of effort. So it's just hard to follow through. And we use the term attention deficit, but a better term is probably variable attention, because some of these kids can play video games, some of these kids could play sports or go fishing and pay attention for 8 hours.
Huh.
But in other environments that they're not interested in, math or history, they have poor attention, and these kids might get A's in one subject and fail in other subjects.
Well, I mean, a lot of it could be they just don't care about history and they want to do something else, so they just do it. I mean, that's not really a health problem, is it? It's a spiritual, philosophical, cultural problem.
For some of these kids, absolutely. Yep, you know, they...
they just don't care, right?
Right, or parents are pushing them in areas that they have no interest in.
Explain?
Well, I mean, you know, you have a high power parent who wants their kid to get A's in honors classes, and the child wants to be a cook or a mechanic. And it's that kind of pressure that I'm seeing more now than I did 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah. So you've seen more parents that really want more for their kids, and they're pushing them?
Absolutely, yeah. And some of that is pressure to get into colleges now. There's a whole industry. Some of it's just pressure parents are putting on kids without really understanding or asking what their child wants.
Right. Is it even, I mean, you're working with kids. When I was in school, I think we had recess 2 or 3 times a day and we got to run around, and they kind of figured, is it really normal, though, for, say, 10-year-old kid to be sitting in class all day?
I think that is, you know, the structure of our schools. You know, being in classrooms with fluorescent lights are not natural and probably not the best learning environment.
Wow.
For our kids, certainly for a subset that really would do better in a different environment.
Yeah. I'm kind of losing you on the speaker. I need you to stay close to that speaker, Doc, if you would.
Sure.
Yeah, you mentioned fluorescent lights, and we've done quite a few shows, Dr. Greenblatt, on the Wi-Fis and even the electricity in the schools, and this is all have to be affecting their brains.
I think it's really the, we know there's a genetic difference, so it's that kind of genetic liability with all these environmental kind of factors, whether it's the fluorescent lights, the diet, the nutrition, the, you know, lack of adequate sunlight, all kind of contributing to vulnerable kids.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email from George. Wants to know, in general, can the doctor go through some of the nutrients that he have found that has been beneficial to work with some of these kids? Do same nutrients keep popping up for them, vitamins and stuff?
Sure. I think the most common nutrient deficiency that we see, both adults and kids, would be magnesium, the trace mineral magnesium.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say it's one of the most consistent findings. I don't think there's any testing that's needed. The vast majority of these kids are deficient, and it's very easy to supplement with.
Yeah.
So magnesium would be the most common. And the other ones, the things you mentioned, was low zinc and high copper.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a common nutrient deficient that we see.
Where do you think that's coming from? There's not a lot, is there still a lot of copper pipes out there? Where do you think the copper comes from?
Yeah, I think it's primarily the copper pipes in the environment, because usually we see it cluster in families. Or areas of Massachusetts where we're in.
Yeah. Do you actually ever go in and do chelation things to get rid of some of the lead or copper or mercury that you find?
We don't do it in our office, but we refer to doctors that do. Certainly for copper, usually we can treat with just high zinc and vitamin C in particular. For lead, oftentimes you do need chelation, and most children's hospitals are very familiar with that.
Hmm.
And mercury, there are environmental docs that do chelation for mercury as well.
Vitamin C generally is used quite a bit in your practice?
Yes, I'm certainly a believer in that, particularly when we're under stress, and these kids are constantly under stress, that our needs for vitamin C go up and we have no ability to make it, as most of the rest of the animal kingdom does.
Yeah.
So I believe an outside source of vitamin C is critical for kids and adults, particularly under stress.
Do you get them on pretty good large doses, like 3, 4, 5 grams a day?
Usually the kids, we can probably get, 1 gram a day.
Uh-huh.
But others struggling with a major mental illness, serious depression, psychosis, schizophrenia, we do use the higher dosages of 3-plus grams of vitamin C. Huh.
Do you do it to bowel tolerance?
For vitamin C, yes. That's the simplest method of supplementation.
Yeah. You just keep taking it until your stool's loose and then you back off a little bit?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Does vitamin C stay in the body very long?
No, it's a water-soluble vitamin, so that's why it should be taken at least twice a day, you know, on a regular basis, because you will excrete, what your body doesn't need.
Do you have a lot of parents that you see, or you quantify the a lot term, that simply want to take a drug or take some pills and not really dig into what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. I sometimes make a joke. I have some parents coming in, demanding medicine. Other parents coming in saying, I would never medicate my kid,
yeah,
even though they're taking multiple medications. So it really varies. And in our approach, looking at individual testing, I think helped parents, and oftentimes a mother and a father would have completely different opinions.
Mm-hmm.
But by doing the testing, we get to objectively help families look at if there's something going on, then we can treat it.
Mm-hmm. What kind of, talk about some of the tests that you actually do on adults and children, and are they different?
No, they're very similar. You mentioned the hair test. Mm-hmm. That's something we do routinely for look at heavy metals and zinc copper ratios. We look at blood tests of vitamins like B12 and vitamin D.
Mm-hmm.
And we also look at that organic acid test to help us look at the gut.
Yeah, yeah. How about, do you find lots of high mercury?
We do find mercury. Primarily, we can detect that in the hair testing and also in blood.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, that can be a factor in many of these behavior problems for kids.
Where do you conjecture it comes from? Do you think it's fish?
Well, so often I can look at the testing and know for the adults that they eat a lot of canned tuna.
Canned tuna,
So I really have seen that correlation pretty dramatically. Being careful about where one gets one's fish and eating the smaller fish rather than the larger fish.
Can you make any connections to the vax kids or the unvax kids to some of this stuff?
What kids? I'm sorry?
The vaccine, kids that get vaccines or not?
Yeah, it's been hard to correlate. I mean, I think all the stories or concerns that I've seen are kids that have had pretty unique dramatic reactions to vaccines.
Yeah.
So there's really no correlation to later incidents of ADHD.
Mm-hmm. Well, what does Ritalin do? Is that the most famous one that was, I don't know, is it still given as widely distributed as it was, say, 10 years ago when all the Ritalin stories came out?
As I said, there are many, many more forms of Ritalin, but Ritalin is still used all the time, and it is, again, abused on college campuses. But now there's, you know, different amphetamines out there, variations of Ritalin, and then different amphetamine combinations. Mm-hmm.
Have you seen some real negative long-term effects to the kids given Ritalin?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I've seen kids doing well, and I've seen kids having side effects. So the biggest concern would be like decreased appetite and sleep. Not the biggest, the most common. And those parents need to really monitor it. But then there are more significant side effects from tics, you know, the eye blinking, the head shrugging, even paranoia and psychosis. If kids take too much of these medications. So the side effects are not necessarily common, but they're real, and we see it all the time. So parents and doctors just have to be aware of them.
Mm-hmm. Talk a bit about some of the other than physical things that you work with in your kids. Do you have different therapies and homework that you give the kids to do? Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. I mean, most of my practice over the years has evolved to helping parents look at the biochemistry, the nutritional differences. But, you know, over the years, we've been very involved in helping what we call parents understand how to, you know, we talk about nourishing the brain, that's the nutrition, but nurturing the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where things like mindfulness training can be very important, helping parents understand that exercise, yoga, and being out in nature are all proven behaviors and therapies that have showed improved attention in multiple kids across multiple studies.
Yeah. Good for you. Well, that must be interesting to talk to the kids about that. Do they get some of this, these ideas or the mind stuff?
Yeah, they actually love it. There's a number of books now coming out on mindfulness for kids.
Really?
Particularly with ADHD. And you think of an ADHD child not being able to sit still.
Yeah.
But you can do mindfulness walking and help these kids be attuned to some of these mind-body practices. And they do very well.
Mm-hmm.
And they do very well in sports like karate and things that they learned how to focus. And that translates to helping them in school.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, getting involved in the martial arts, I guess, would be a good thing. So can you conjecture of how this technological revolution with the kids starting on computers and video games, of course, texting and iPhones and stuff, is affecting the mind-brain paradigm?
Yeah, I think that there is research now. It kind of went all over the Internet about, you know, screen time, you know, exacerbating symptoms of ADHD, and now some studies hinting it may be a contributing factor. I think looking at the literature, you know, it's hard to ban all screens and all videos because it's so much part of our culture. But I do have some concerns in some of the literature on some of the younger children. You see these infants sitting in front of iPads. I would be much more cautious about the first few years of life inundating these kids with screens. And what it teaches them is if things happen so quickly, it likely does affect the ability during brain development for sustained attention.
So it's kind of a reward kind of thing. And as a psychiatrist, you probably have an opinion on this. I mean, I can even see for myself how it's easy to get a little bit even hooked, in a sense, on email or something. It's like the brain or the body gets this little hit. It's almost like a little, you know, like a little piece of, when you train a dog, a little, you know what I mean, a little bit of food or something like that.
Well, yeah, we can call it a little bit of dopamine.
So. Is that what it is, Doc, what's going on in the brain?
Yeah, dopamine is kind of the reward chemical, so if you do something you're enjoying, you're going to get a little dopamine, and that's what's going to help you stay motivated and focused.
Yeah.
And that's what the medicines do. Ritalin, you mentioned, that enhances the release of dopamine. So we can get it naturally by doing something exciting that we like, or we can take a pill. So the video games are very high stimulation, so that's why these kids might not be able to pay attention, but they can probably spend a lot of time on these video games. So, you know, short bursts are okay, but if that's their only source of stimulation, it becomes a chronic problem.
So the video games actually are releasing dopamine?
Sure, if you're enjoying it and having pleasure, whenever you're doing something pleasurable, you're going to release a little dopamine.
But then it would be easy, just like a beer or something, it'd be easy to get hooked on it.
Exactly, and that's the form of addiction. There are also now video games looking to treat ADHD.
Really?
So, you know, technology has gotten to the point where we are now developing, and someone is trying to get FDA approval, you know, for video games to treat ADHD.
I don't travel very much, but about a month ago, I went on a little vacation for a week and traveled in an airplane and went through the airport, and I was just astounded. It had been years since I traveled, astounded at the people walking through the airport, everybody looking on their cell phone, right? I mean, it's just like it's an epidemic. People just, they're just all walking and looking at their cell phone. They're in line, right, for the tickets, and everybody's got a cell phone. And so it can't be that they're just that interested in the world or emailing. This must be a real physiological, spiritual, mental something going on that's not right.
Yes, it's really changing how our children function in school. They're on their phones now in school.
In school.
It's not just in the airports and walking around. So it's a very, very kind of frustrating thing, and that does appear to get in the way of these kids' brain development.
Yeah. Well, what's a brain's development? Do you see these kinds of things affecting your adults with relationships and all that as well?
Well, absolutely. Brain development goes on till age, till our 20s, our late 20s. So it's really important that we kind of understand that. And that's why providing both adequate nutrition and nurturing and support all contributes to brain development.
Do you think that the early years that kids are getting on the computers now are part of the problem themselves, just getting on so early?
I believe that this the younger kids, these infants, young toddlers before school age, I believe in my reading of the literature that limiting screen time for this group is critical.
So it actually affects the wiring or the development of the brain somehow?
Yes, that's what the research is slowly coming out, trying to understand better. I'm not a fanatic where I do have parents coming in saying they don't allow any TV, any screen time, any this. I'm just not sure in this culture we can do that. But for our younger kids, particularly our infants, I think we're obligated to try to minimize that screen time and then being, hooked to a TV or iPad.
Yeah, yeah. Before we go, can you, as a psychiatrist, an integrative psychiatrist, give us a broad view of what you see going on in adults and this whole opioid thing that's so talked about these days? Can you talk about it a little bit?
Sure. I do think all rates of brain illnesses are reaching epidemic, Alzheimer's in particular, and what is most in the news, as you described, is this opiate epidemic where more people are dying daily and weekly and monthly, individuals from all walks of life. And I think it reflects a number of things, particularly the culture, the easy access to medications that quickly provide these neurochemical changes of addiction. So the body then craves these substances, and it's very hard to stop. And the withdrawal is so miserable that you just feel better when you take more of a drug.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe some of this could be tied to kind of the environmental stuff we talked about, the stress we talked about, nutritional deficiencies, But it's the easy access, the overprescribing of painkillers by our physicians that have created this culture. And for opiate addiction in particular, I believe, and most physicians believe, that medication-assisted withdrawal is the most helpful, and this is not available to everyone.
Yeah. I'm just kind of at a loss to truly understand how all these well-meaning people go through all this training, 8 years or so, and you're an MD, you've been through it, and do not see what's going on with this overprescription stuff that they're involved in. I don't get it. Can you help me understand it?
Well, I really can't. I mean, certainly some of it was, you know, if you've ever had surgery, you know what pain is, and we have medicines to relieve that. So rather than giving, you know, a short supply to relieve that pain, doctors were just refilling months and months of painkillers and then the dependence and addiction. Some of it were clinics being opened that were just, you know, trying to make a profit. There were multiple TV shows throughout the country, people just setting up pain clinics and people just walking in and getting prescriptions,
mm-hmm.
Generating millions of dollars for profit. So it's a combination of pharmaceutical access and doctors not being as careful, I think, as they should have been, creating this atmosphere for this horrific dependence on these drugs.
Yeah. I'm just wondering why some of these well-educated men and women today do not have the state of mind to understand that the damage that they're doing over-prescribing these things. It's just hard for me to comprehend.
Yeah, and a lot of the patients that we're seeing who are dependent, that it the doctors started the pain medicine, but then they were able to get it illegally,
mm-hmm.
and on the street, on the internet. And then, you know, the biggest concern is that heroin is cheap compared to these medicines, so then it flips to heroin and then another cycle of addiction.
Well, Doc, you're an interesting fellow to talk about. Good work. Your book, when was this released, Finally Focused, just recently?
It was released the end of last year, and it's still available, as kids and parents are always looking for answers of how to treat their kids with ADHD.
Cool. FinallyFocused.com is the website. Well, Doc, keep up the good work. We appreciate you being here, sir. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Well, there's one good one out there trying to do some cool things, huh? Okay, it's August 14th, 2018, and just